listening to Cinema Jaw, the greatest movies podcast ever. Recorded on location at the Original Mothers Nightclub in Chicago. My name is Matt Kay, and with me is...
Ry, the movie guy. And this week on Cinema Jaw, Matt, we live, die, and repeat as we cover our top five favorite Tom Cruise scenes.
Are we scraping the bottom here, dude?
No, I don't think so.
Are you sure?
You know what? This was an idea I had after a few cocktails, and I was watching a movie.
That's what I'm talking about.
And I was like, wow, you know, we've never really... You know, sometimes we've done in-depth on a particular actor or director.
Yeah.
And at that point, we were just sort of brushing over their best, worst, and most underrated. But when you got an actor or a director who has made so many movies and so many great movies, you got to even get a little bit more precise and tackle their five best scenes. I think it's going to be a lot of fun with somebody like Tom Cruise.
You know, there are some absolute icons of cinema that he just so happens to be a part of.
Yes, and we are doing this because he has a new movie coming out the 6th of June called Edge of Tomorrow.
Oh, I thought you were talking about Mission Impossible 7, right?
I don't think they're on 7 quite
Six?
Yet. I think they're on 5, and I believe it is coming out.
Okay.
Announced, anyways.
Yeah, and Top Gun 2.
Yep.
And Jack Reacher 2. Oh, what the hell?
Let's hope not.
All right.
That's just rumored.
It's on IMDb.
Well, we'll see. We also have a great guest who's going to be joining us. He is making his second appearance on Cinema Jaw. Mark Dusick from the website Mark Reviews Movies is coming back on Cinema Jaw.
Always a pleasure having Mark.
It is. We go eye for an eye this week on A Million Ways to Die in the West, Seth MacFarlane's new film.
Yeah, a little Western action.
Reviews. We got brand new reviews, Jawheads, of the new Adam Sandler, Drew Barrymore movie, Blended. Me and Elias got out and caught that. I know Mark has seen it as well. Plus, Mark also has a review for us of X-Men, Days of Future Past.
And I think I just heard the Hawks score again.
They did. They are up 2-0 as we record this.
This is fantastic, man. It's a great day.
It is. Plus, it can't even get more jam-packed, but it can, Matt. This is a Tom Cruise episode, so this is jam-packed.
Packed with action.
We have
the tidy whities are bursting at the seams.
In honor of X-Men, Days of Future Past, we are playing X movie trivia. Think of movies with X in the title. You'd be shocked how many there are.
Not that shocked.
All right.
Wait, does the numeral, the Roman numeral 10 count?
We'll see. We'll see how creative I got.
Okay.
And then also, Seth MacFarlane is actually acting in the new Western movie. So we are going to be having a cinema war, Matt, because I think this looks like a terrible idea to have Seth MacFarlane now not only behind the camera, but also in front of it.
You're dead wrong.
No way.
No, he's a very talented guy.
Cinema War. Yeah. Boy, oh boy. Jam-packed, Matthew. So without further ado, we bring in our guest. He has made an appearance once before on Cinema Jaw. Mark Dusick, welcome to Cinema Jaw.
Hi. Wow, I was not prepared for such a simple response. Yeah, that's great to be back.
It goes on for another hour from here,
God,
Mark.
Man. Well, I peaked. That's the end of it. Good night.
Oh, man. Glad to have you back here. How are things going on over there at Mark Reviews Movies?
They are going well. Had kind of a slow start to the year. But everything's kind of picking back up. I had some bad family stuff going on at the beginning of the year. Not a good year for the Dusick family. But things are getting back. I'm keeping going. And reviews keep coming out. I'm trying to get to as much as I can as usual and get reviews out as soon as I can. Usually... Always, actually, the day of release, usually about 3 reviews a week, sometimes shorter.
Yeah.
Sometimes they switch the release date on me. Like, I had fed up a documentary, and they switched the release date. I had the review ready to go. I'm like, oh, wait a minute. It's not coming out of Chicago yet.
Is that something you'd hold on to, or would you go ahead and put
I have officially held on to it until its Chicago release date this week, which is probably going to be last week. But yeah, I did have to
really?
Hold on to
that's,
it.
Really? That's interesting. Why wouldn't you put it out? Because, I mean, the internet is a global market, right?
Well, yes, but technically because I'm in Chicago, I still have to abide by the embargoes for Chicago releases. It's kind of messed up, but you got to play by the rules or you don't get to play at all.
It should be
Fair
noted
enough.
To the Jawheads that Mark is an accredited film critic. He has been part of the Chicago Film Critics Association for how long now?
Since 2006. And then with the Online Film Critics Society since 2003, maybe two. But yeah, I've been with them for a while. So.
Not to beat the dead horse, but does the Online Film Critics, that accreditation,
allow you to release it, or you're just...
No, it does not. Yeah. It's still based on the fact that I'm in Chicago, and then even though my website has no, you know,
physical
circulation of any kind, still got to abide by a Chicago release, and that doesn't... It usually doesn't hurt except on indie releases or art house movies. That's the only time it really hurts, where, you know, you have movies coming out weeks before it comes to Chicago.
Sure.
Rotten Tomatoes is filling up, and I have to wait.
Yeah.
I know I've run into it a couple of times with film festivals where, for instance, James Gray's The Immigrant is now finally being released. It actually opened up the Chicago International Film Festival back in October, and I saw it opening night.
Yeah.
And
that was October of 2013.
Correct. Yeah, that was last year.
I mean, this is how long ago. It's just coming out last week, I believe, finally opened. And I was going to review it on CinemaJaw as soon as I saw it, you know?
But you still could have. You know, film festivals are kind of off limits in terms of embargoes, so you could have gotten away with that.
Yeah, but I thought, like, well, I don't want to review it, and the jawheads have no way to see it.
Exactly. That's one of the other reasons I'm not a big fan of people who break embargoes. You know, if you have a review, like, everyone broke an embargo on Godzilla, although I think the studio just kind of said, hey, you guys can go ahead and publish your reviews. That's cool. But people can't see it. What's the point of you having it out there if you can't actually see it? The whole point of film criticism is starting up a discussion about a movie. And if your audience hasn't even been able to see the movie, what's the point of having your end of the discussion out there? I don't get it. But, you know, some people like to have it out there first and yell first. It's the internet and
right.
everything. Just putting it out there and yelling first.
First. Yeah.
Now, you've been reviewing films for so long. Do you ever have a number in your head of how many you have reviewed now? And it's got to be boggling.
I could probably look it up on Rotten Tomatoes, but I think we're over 1,000. I know that much. Maybe like 1,200 or maybe more.
That's a lot of reviews to write.
Yeah, I have to throw that in the Jawbox. How many reviews I have on Rotten
Tomatoes?
Throw it
in the Jawbox. Throw it in the Jawbox.
I remember the Jawbox. It's been a year, but I remember the Jawbox.
That's fantastic.
Elias, how many reviews does Mark Dusick have on Rotten Tomatoes?
And you said we, but Mark reviews movies. That's all Mark, right? That's all you.
Oh, yeah, that's all me. Yeah, I don't know why I was saying we. Probably.
It's the royal we.
Yeah, exactly. It's the editorial we.
So for the jawheads listening to this that want to, you know, read your reviews, where's the best place to do so online?
www.markreviewsmovies.com. That is the best place to go to. Everything that I have out there is there, whether it's for my site or on the off chance that I'm writing for another site, it's going to be there.
And you're also on Twitter?
I am on Twitter at markreviews.
Perfect.
Simple. It's easy.
It's very easy.
They can also look you up on Rotten Tomatoes, because I know a lot of people go to Rotten Tomatoes and they can favorite their critics so that you can actually look.
Cool.
Yeah. So you can actually look at the 10 or 15 or 35 critics that you really trust. They could actually look you up and favorite you.
See, I don't find out if anyone's favorited me or not. So I could have like 100. Don't find this out, though. Don't put this in the Jawbox. How many people have me down as your favorite critic? Do not put that in there.
But do definitely, jawheads, check out Mark's reviews at markreviewsmovies.com. Wonderful site and insightful reviews. I always get a kick out of them because I know I've seen you at a couple of screenings, and I think, can't wait to see what Mark has to say after I record my review on CinemaJaw. We'll see what Mark has to say about it. So it's always fun.
Yeah, that is fun.
It is. So definitely, jawheads, support the critics here that we have on the show and check out the reviews. Got to thank Mark again for coming on. He has his top five Tom Cruise scenes, which we're going to get to in a minute. But Matt, it brings us to a segment called Eye for an Eye, Interest or Ignore, and Eye for an Eye is sponsored by
Castin.
Tell me more.
Do you love podcasts? Imagine a place where you could find thousands of podcasts covering every topic and genre imaginable. Castin.com will be that place. Castin is an all-new platform that helps you discover new podcasts and lets you interact with your favorite podcasters like never before. Castin will introduce brand new features to the world of podcasting, such as listener reviews, spoiler alerts, podcaster shops, and so much more. Right now, Castin needs your help to make this dream a reality. All you have to do is go to Castin.com, log in with your Facebook account, and click vote. It's that easy. Head to Castin.com to find out more. That's Castin.com. Castin, the future of podcasting.
That's awesome. Thank you, Castin.
Thank you.
Eye for an Eye this week met A Million Ways to Die in the West. After cowardly Albert backs out of a gunfight because he's never fired his gun, his fickle girlfriend leaves him for another man, the owner of the town's foremost mustache emporium. When Albert accidentally saves the life of a mysterious and beautiful woman, she helps him find his courage and learn to stand up for himself. The film is written and directed by Seth MacFarlane, who also stars as Albert. Joining him on screen is Charlize Theron, Neil Patrick Harris, Liam Neeson, and Sarah Silverman. Matt, interested or ignore on A Million Ways to Die in the West?
I'm interested. I love that cast. As I like to say, this film has a pedigree.
We throw it over to Mark. Interested or ignore on A Million Ways to Die in the West?
Interested. I liked Ted. I still enjoy Family Guy. I know it's just a bunch of silly jokes thrown together for no good reason, like, you know, the guys on South Park kept saying, but I still laugh at it, just like the guys on South Park kept saying. So I'm looking forward to it. And yeah, it's a really good cast.
The hooker poop on the floor joke from Ted still still makes me laugh.
Oh, God.
Oh, what?
Oh, this is so gross.
Don't tell me. I don't want to hear about it.
Oh, my God. No, I didn't get it.
Tell me when you get it.
Oh, my God. I got some on my thumb.
No.
Oh, yes, I did.
You can never cook with that hand again.
Oh, my God.
Look, that was a tough night for all of us.
It does here, too. And I was a big fan of Ted. I like Family Guy. I don't watch it as much as a lot of people. I've seen the trailer for this, and I laughed out loud a couple of times at the trailer. I'm interested. Three interesteds for A Million Ways to Die in the West. I don't think it'll be as good as Ted, but what he's got going right now is pretty good.
We don't get that many Western comedies anyway, so it's kind of nice to have that back.
It's almost like sacred ground, right? I mean, really, what's another Western comedy that springs to mind? Blazing Saddles. What else?
The Billy Crystal masterpiece.
Oh, come on.
City Slickers, maybe?
It's not really a Western,
it's
though.
It's kind of a Western,
a
but
bit of a Western?
Well, it's just because it's set in modern times. It's contemporary versus, you know,
right.
It's old West. Period it's piece. Not really, yeah.
Back to the Future 3?
Also, not a Western.
Hey, I'm just rattling them off here, man.
Actually, Noel, that one I'd say more than City Slickers just because it is set in the Old West and the time that we're expecting. But, you know, and that's a good one, too.
More of a sci-fi adventure flick than a comedy. It's a comedic sci-fi adventure flick.
It's a comic sci-fi adventure. We could just go through genres all day.
I know. Come on, Matt.
I am nitpicking.
Loosen up over there
a
little bit.
It's a comic sci-fi adventure Western.
Well put.
Yeah.
Anyways, three interesteds for A Million Ways to Die in the West. And Seth MacFarlane is in this film. And I thought it would be fun for him to be our topic of three words or less to describe Seth MacFarlane. We'll throw it over to the guest first. Mark, you got three words that describe Seth?
Still pretty funny.
I like the way you said that.
I think so. Like I said, with Family Guy, I still watch it. And, you know, I laugh occasionally. It's still pretty funny. Don't watch American Dad. I skipped that one.
American Dad was like his vanity project. They're like, this, you know, give this guy another project because Family Guy's going so well.
Matt, you got three words that describe Seth MacFarlane?
I would say potty mouth genius.
Only needed two.
That's well, it's
well,
hyphenated.
It's hyphenated.
Yeah, it's a hyphenated. Yeah. That works, though.
There are three components to it.
In regards to his Oscar hosting, I went with awful Oscar host.
Yeah, he kind of blew that one, I guess.
Yeah, he kind of, yeah. It's a thankless job, though. I mean, if you actually get yourself a name doing it, you might be doing a good job, because most of the times you just kind of forget who hosted. You know, Ellen, I would have, you know, except for
the selfie?
The selfie, yeah. That's the only thing that really sticks out from Ellen hosting it. Otherwise, I forgot that Hugh Jackman had hosted it.
Right.
Because it really, you just show up, you do your big opening number, either a musical or a stand-up comic bit, and then you just disappear only to show up for like 20 seconds every half hour. It's really thankless job.
It's true.
Now, we threw this question out to the Jawheads on Twitter. Matt, do we get any responses?
Oh, yes, we did. Tabby Tabo, who is at Tabby Tabo, and I'm apologizing ahead of time if I'm mispronouncing, said Botox teeth overexhausted.
Wow.
Tough crowd.
I don't know about the Botox thing. Is that a fact? I mean,
no, I don't think he's had Botox. Not that I know of.
He does smile a lot.
Yeah, he's got a tight-looking face.
I agree. There was a picture of him for this particular movie, and I thought, God, look at his face. I would agree. I guess what she's going for is at least hinting that his skin is very tight.
Maybe he eats well. We don't know. Is it Tabby Tabo or Tabby Taboo? Because that would be completely different things, by the way.
Abby Taboo or Tabo. Tabo, not Taboo.
Oh, no, it's not. It's French. Okay. Yeah. Taboo would have been interesting, though. Tabby Taboo.
Yeah. Rodney Stone, our friend who is at JerOB on Twitter, said, "Shtick wearing out."
Ooh.
But still pretty funny. That's why.
You know, I think
it follows up with Mark's story. Yeah. I like it.
JerOB is a fellow film critic. I think we were honestly hurt by his Oscars hosting. Like, a lot of film critics don't like him as much anymore.
You think?
I do.
I think so.
You do? You agree?
Yeah, I thought it hurt him a little bit.
It definitely did. Good Podcasts, who is at good_podcast on Twitter, said, "Funny but repetitive."
Yeah, I could see. I could see that his shtick is getting old. It's going along with the same stuff we got going here.
Yep. Yeah, he's going to like intercut into some, you know, random asides like every 10 minutes. But that is his shtick. Mm-hmm. Bob Repass, who is at Bob Trek, said, "Irreverent, satiric, and profane." Well said.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely describes Seth MacFarlane right there. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we got one more. Nicholas Venable, who is at ELBANEV. I'm not going to try to pronounce it. Elbanev? I'd try to pronounce it. Family Guy creator. I got this on lock.
That's pretty great.
That's pretty objective right there.
Three words? I like it. I like it. Jawheads, if you have Twitter pulled up and we missed three words that describe Seth MacFarlane, shoot us a tweet at CinemaJaw. We'll retweet it and get the discussion going.
I'm
going
to change mine to 6 foot tall. Right? Too literal? No, that one bombed.
Yeah,
just
terrible.
Go on. Go on to the next.
It's tough to move on past that.
I know.
All right.
But I should host the Oscars next year.
See, now you're rolling again.
Yeah.
You're back in the Jawhead's good graces. Matt, it brings us to movie reviews in the theater. Up first is Blended.
My name is Jim.
I'm Lauren.
Got you buffalo shrimp with a sauce on the side.
Oh. Who makes sauce this hot? Did you drink my beer? Can you get me some water?
Here, have some French onion soup. No more dating for me. It's time I should be spending with my kids.
Want to shoot some hoop?
Jim, what do you want?
She says she's not interested in you.
Believe me, Frodo, I don't like her either. The restaurant mixed up our cards.
Oh.
Lauren! I have to talk to you.
What's wrong?
It's over between me and Dick.
Now nobody gets to go. Where was he gonna take you?
Africa.
Is his last name Theodopoulos?
Yes.
That's my boss.
My boy would give anything to go on a vacation like this.
Mr. Theodopoulos, hi, it's Jim.
I wonder
if you'd be willing to sell me the vacation?
Wait until I tell the boys.
Wait till I tell the girls.
We're going to Africa! Yeah!
Welcome to Africa.
Matt, I am sorry to say, the third time was not the charm for Drew Barrymore and Adam Sandler. Blended is by far the worst film they have made together. The film opens with the pair meeting on a blind date at Hooters that does not go so good. Flash forward a few months down the road, and the two of them, plus their kids, are booked on the same African vacation. Why this is set in Africa, I have no idea. One of the most horrid things is how Disney they make Africa look. Little to no wildlife is shown, and the resort they stay at comes off like something out of Orlando, Florida. At this point, the movie falls into your typical rom-com formula. Drew Barrymore and Adam Sandler do not like each other, neither do their families. Slowly they learn, they have some things in common, and start to have some fun. One of the characters gets a makeover, the two leads fall in love, Steve Buscemi makes a cameo, roll credits. The film's most creative joke is spoiled in the trailer, that in which a different song plays for different people as they react to Sandler's daughter's new makeover. I had a few laughs besides that one, and very few at that. Just when I thought the pain was done, they decided to pull a Lord of the Rings and give us three endings. If you're looking for a comedy this summer,
what is this, Clue?
Stick with Neighbors. Skip Blended. Ride the Movie Guy's grade. One jaw.
Ow.
I hear this one should be called Bloated. After Adam Sandler's physique.
Ow.
He's really let himself go.
Tough crowd going
He's
around
no
here.
He's no Seth MacFarlane in terms.
Yeah. His skin is not too tight.
Mark, you also saw Blended. You agree with this review?
I'm not so harsh as you about it. It's and I have not enjoyed an Adam Sandler movie in quite a bit. And it just kind of like Oscar host, if you asked me to remember which ones came out in the last couple of years, I wouldn't be able to tell you. I know Jack and Jill came out. There was another one.
That's my boy.
That's it. Thank you. That's my boy. Yeah, that one was pretty bad, too. I think this one is not horrible. You're right, though. It is just complete rom-com formula. There's absolutely nothing interesting about it. The way that they actually present Africa is cloying, and it makes absolutely no sense. As for why it's filmed in Africa, I think we've learned now that the only reason Adam Sandler really does any movies anymore is to do vacations with his friends and say, hey, look where we can go and just film a couple of scenes every few days and just have fun. And that's why it's set in Africa. It's just so they can get out of the house and go do have a fun vacation.
How many Jaws on a four-jaw scale?
You know, I'd be very generous and I'd give it two.
That's huge generous.
It is very generous, yeah.
That's middle-of-the-road territory.
Yeah, it is middle-of-the-road territory. Still bad, but not as awful, I think, as you're presenting it. But yeah, there's definitely... It's just kind of dull. It's not offensive for me, from where I was at. It's not offensive, but it's just dull.
It needed a laugh-out-loud moment, and it was laughing.
There are none.
Wow, that was funny.
I mean, I expect a little more. I haven't seen it, but I expect a little more out of the Drew Barrymore-Adam Sandler combo. So I think that it's fair to give it lower marks because of that expectation.
Yeah. Well, let's pull Elias out of the jaw box a little bit early. He was slurping down a couple of Manhattans alongside me when we saw this on Monday night, because you need Manhattans to get through an Adam Sandler movie.
What are you guys, like Sex in the City?
Hey, I need a partner. You can't make it. You got little Quinn at home. So Elias is, coming out to the movies.
Yeah, but
me.
I mean the Manhattans. What's up with that?
That's got vermouth in it, right?
Yeah, you got vermouth and whiskey.
Is there any PBR in it?
No. It was Maker's Mark for the jawheads wondering at home. Elias, get out of that jaw box, and what'd you think of Blended?
What's going on, guys? Yes, I'm glad you mentioned the Manhattans, because I actually did have a nice buzz, and I was like, I was expecting it to be horrendous, and just, especially because I'm a comedy filmmaker, I just was expecting the jokes just to be, they were stereotypical formulas throughout. The rom-com formula, not to mention the Adam Sandler gag formula. But I don't know, I just... It had consistent jokes or gags that weren't that bad. I mean, like, sure, there was, like, shopping for their kids' tampons or whatever the hell. Like, easy jokes like that. But what they did with them, it was kind of consistent to keep me into it.
Wait, it sounds like you're apologizing for this movie.
I mean, for what it was...
It's the wrong person
like
apologizing
you're
for
going it. Into it knowing that it's going to be crap. And for what it was, it kind of impressed me. I mean, like, it was decent crap, is what I'm saying.
How many Jaws?
Two.
Two Jaws, see?
But, well, here's what I'm
decent
saying.
Decent crap.
Decent crap.
Put that on the poster.
Yeah, that goes in the TV ads.
Because, I was so let down by Godzilla, and, for, you know, that movie, you're looking for a summer blockbuster, and it was just so let down. This, I was expecting crap, and I got the crap, you know, but it was good.
Your taste is highly suspect.
This probably isn't a good time to mention the Jawheads that we're doing a blended giveaway as well. We have some prize packs for them, follow us on Twitter.
You know what? I think this thing is going to disappear from the theater so fast, these might be collector's items.
They might be. Element I wanted to ask Elias and Mark also about the film. I thought another humorous moment was the idea that Adam Sandler's oldest daughter is referred to a boy so many times in the movie. I thought that was sort of funny.
That bugged me. That one bugged me. I'm like, okay, so that's the best you can do is that the daughter has, you know, bowl cut haircut.
Right, and exactly. And you knew the makeover was coming up.
Yeah.
But one thing I do want to point out, how about Shaq's acting? I think he did an awesome job.
Shaq is in this film. And yeah. It was all
Shaquille
right.
O'Neal for those not in the know.
But like, you know,
we've known for a long time, ever since, what was the Superman? He did a Superman movie too. It wasn't Man of Steel. It was, Jawbox.
Steel, I think.
Just Steel, right, yeah. Since then, I've known he could act.
But no, seriously, you guys, whoever's going to see it in the theater, you'll see he brings it. For the small role he does, he's a good actor.
You know who's very funny? Terry Crews.
Oh, yeah.
Not necessarily in this movie, just in general. Yeah. Terry Crews is very funny. In Brooklyn Nine-Nine. That's another gag. There's an African chorus that shows up intermittently throughout the movie just to comment upon everything that's happening. It can be the most random thing, and that's one of the things that kind of bugs me about the movie, is that there's so many comic asides where it's just like, here's a nice scene, and then here's something completely out of the blue that has nothing to do with anything else. And some of them hit, some of them miss. It's just... And
there was
they
a
don't
lot of
hit
like,
that well.
Over sexual jokes that were thrown in there, exactly what you're saying, and those were a lot of misses there.
Yeah, there were.
And also, for you Adam Sandler fans, they probably know that he puts Dan Patrick in almost all of his movies. He makes a cameo, and I thought his cameo at the end, he's got a handlebar mustache and he's at the baseball game, was pretty good as well.
I'm still trying to remember it. I think I saw it. When did I see it? 2 days ago, and I'm still trying to remember.
Is he one of the dudes from Little Nicky?
He might be. I have never seen Little Nicky, but you know who Dan Patrick is from ESPN, and now he's on, you know, he's part of the Olympics.
No,
and
he's not who I was
part of the
of.
Channel 5 family now.
Right. Was Steve Buscemi actually in it?
He was as well. Yeah, Buscemi was in it.
Where was he at?
He was also in the baseball game.
I thought I saw a guy who looked somewhat Buscemi-esque.
Yes.
But I didn't know if it was him or not.
Yeah, Buscemi is in there. So.
Wow.
So you heard it here, Jawheads. Rye the Movie Guy, one jaw. Mark reviews movies, two jaws. Elias out of the jaw box, two jaws. That's about as many jaws as this can get is two jaws.
I'm not going to even watch it.
Now,
it from Redbox.
There actually may be a big movie opening up this Friday. I wouldn't know because it has to do with the mutants and superheroes, Matt. So I'm a little clueless here. This is your category. But Mark, I believe you saw X-Men Days of Future Past.
Indeed I did. X-Men Days of Future Past is a simultaneous sequel to both X-Men First Class and X-Men The Last Stand. There are a few plot holes from where I was at in terms of how it's a sequel to The Last Stand, because it just kind of jumps ahead a few, maybe like a decade from the last movie, I'm guessing, just because the timeline is inconsistent. I'm not sure what years everything are taking place.
It's a time travel movie, you got
to
forget.
Well, yeah, but beyond that, it's the way that it's established at the beginning, it's hard to tell exactly where they're at. You know that they're in the future, even from where The Last Stand is, and not in an immediate future, but at some point down the road. And then X-Men First Class, it's about 10 years after it's 10 years after X-Men First Class takes place. And so, basically, all of mutant kind is being wiped out by giant robots called the Sentinels, who can adapt to mutant powers and actually fight against mutants using their own powers or countering their own powers. They're pretty neat, and they're pretty
Did they get
intense.
The Sentinels right?
I think they did. They do them a little different from the comic books and from the animated TV show, which is where my basis for all things X-Men is. They're different, but they're kind of badass. And there are some gruesome death scenes involved with them, which I was not anticipating at all, but it's still kind of like, oh, okay, these guys mean business. So with mutant kind basically eliminated, Professor X, who somehow is alive again, that's one of those holes that, I mean, maybe you know exactly, and that's something I would like to ask you about, if you know how Professor X ends up alive again.
It's comics.
After Last Stand. They never explained that. Wolverine is kind of confused that
nobody
Charles Xavier can walk, but no one is like, oh, wait a minute, he's alive again? Oh, okay. I thought he kind of disintegrated. How'd that happen? So anyway, Professor X comes up with a plan to send Wolverine back in time using Kitty Pryde. Thank you. Kitty Pryde's mutant powers. He goes back in time 50 years to try to prevent the Sentinels from ever being formed and the events that bring the Sentinels to the present time where mutants are being eliminated. Watching it, I was kind of reminded of being a kid reading comic books, collecting comic books, watching the X-Men animated series, and thinking, this is pretty cool. I enjoyed it. I might not have enjoyed it as much as First Class, which was actually the first X-Men movie I sincerely liked without any hesitation. But it's definitely on par with that one for me. It might be a little bit better. The time travel gimmick is done really well, primarily because they don't sit around talking about it that much. It's actually the thing that's explained the least in the entire movie. They have to catch you up with everything that's happening with the Sentinels because they didn't bother to do it in the first three movies, X-Men, X2, and X-Men Last Stand. They didn't bother doing any of that. So they're catching you up with so much history that the time travel thing is just like, oh, you know what? It's happening. Just go with it. But it's entertaining, and I still, most of the time is spent with Charles Xavier, is played by James McAvoy, and Eric Lerner, who's played by Michael Fassbender. And I prefer those two to Patrick Stewart and Ian McKellen, if only for the fact that those characters have some depth and there's actual development to those characters in First Class and in this one, too. So I enjoyed it. I would give it...
How many Jaws?
I'd give it 3 Jaws.
Wow. Question here, though. There's been a few superhero movies out already. We had Captain America. We had Spider-Man. And now we have X-Men. Where does this one rank? Is this better than Captain America?
I would say probably about on par with that one, too. I mean, I give Captain America 3 Jaws. I'd give this one 3 Jaws. They're both entertaining, and they do completely different things, but... Mm-hmm. They're still both entertaining. I enjoyed them. And they kind of, both of those go beyond just what you'd expect from a comic book movie, which is just kind of mutant power action. This one has a really solid story, and it talks about historical, there's actual historical context to it. The entire plot, everything that leads up to the Sentinels coming up surrounds the Paris Peace Accords, which is after Vietnam, and that's where everything goes. Richard Nixon is in it.
Oh, nice.
There's a moment, probably the funniest moment in the movie involves the tape recorder and what he actually does with it when he's talking about mutants versus everything else that has ever happened in his career. So, yeah, I enjoyed it.
Nice. 3 Jaws from Mark Dusick here. I know you're excited to see this one, man.
We are in an absolute golden age of comic book movies. Finally, the filmmakers, Hollywood, I'll just say, has learned that these stories can have depth but still be comic book movies. They can still be more than just, you know, bam, pow, Adam West, you know, campy bullshit. Which even when Tim Burton was making the Batman films, he didn't quite get that. He made great Batman films, but they're still too comic booky. He didn't give the material enough credit that it can stand up without being campy and bright primary colors or even the muted darkness that he threw up there. He just didn't get it as much as they've gotten it now. You know, the audiences are there. They're mature enough to accept these real stories. And they've been there in the comics all along.
I hear you. And what's amazing, too, Matt, is you had a hall pass. You know, obviously the Jawheads know that you got a little one at home. It's been tough for you to get out and see movies. Matt finally has a hall pass. He can go see a movie. He has Spider-Man 2 playing, or he has Godzilla playing. What'd you pick?
Godzilla. And my wife, when I told her which one I picked, she's like, who are you? But I think I made the right choice.
You did
here.
Make the right choice. Yeah. Between Spider-Man and that, yeah, you made the right choice.
And Elias, how could you say you were disappointed even slightly by this movie? Clearly, you have no idea what to expect from a Godzilla movie. I'm just going to go ahead and say it. This is the best Godzilla movie I've ever seen. And it was so much fun. It was freaking awesome. Everyone in the theater, and I was watching it at the new 400, so this was not a premiere. The movie theater was packed. But, you know, it's a smaller theater here in Chicago. Everybody was cheering for Godzilla. Like, literally, like, yeah!
That's how it was at our screening as
well.
I'm
reading that a lot on Twitter. I saw it with in a room full of critics, so there was no cheering going on. But I've been reading it on Twitter and other, reports about it. People are just standing up and cheering. I'm wondering at what points they did. I'm just curious.
Well, there's a couple. We saw it, me and Elias saw it at a screening, where they preview screening where it was packed. And, the first time Godzilla finally is shown full on,
and he roars.
It takes a long time.
There's nothing wrong with that.
Maybe 90 minutes into the movie, I don't know.
That's about an hour,
I think. Everybody applauds. And then there's a couple of the battle scenes, especially when you first see Godzilla's shooting his fire breath.
It's radioactive, right?
Whatever the hell it is.
Radioactive.
Everybody goes nuts as well. So me and Elias both commented. There were probably about maybe 4 applause
and when
breaks.
Off the female Muto at the end, and he just breath right down her I mean, that was brilliant. It's such
spoiler
a great
alerts.
Scene.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. Hey, sorry.
Finish her.
See how excited Matt's getting.
Loved Godzilla.
How many Jaws?
I would say, listen, if I'm judging this against other monster movies, it's a 4-jaw monster movie. Out of the summer so far, it's my favorite. I would give this 3.5 Jaws. It was great. It did have the pacing problems you mentioned. I will give you that. It definitely has a bit of a third act lull where you're just like, come on already. But once it gets there, it delivers so hard, it makes up for that completely. So and I think that was what they were going for, because if you've ever seen a Godzilla movie, that's what they do.
Oh yeah. Especially the Godzilla versus movies, which is what this is.
Yep.
I wasn't expecting that. I think a lot of people who maybe didn't care for it that much or had problems with it might have been expecting another, original Godzilla,
right,
or Godzilla 1984, 85, or the Roland Emmerich Godzilla, where it's just Godzilla going around destroying stuff and people trying to kill him. You don't expect a Godzilla versus movie in here because suddenly it's just, oh, wait a minute. Oh, that fake out at the half hour mark where you are building up to this and you know it's got to be Godzilla. It's got to be Godzilla. It's got to be Godzilla. And it's just a giant insect.
Yeah.
It's fantastic. The fact that you build it up so much and then just let everybody down. I really admired that. I like the movie too, and I get people who say there's not enough Godzilla in it. I don't know if that's where you're at. Yeah,
that's where I'm at.
That's where you're at. Okay, I get it.
Well, there's too much human story that you don't give a crap about.
And that's but I like the human story. I really did. I like that first half hour of Bryan Cranston, and not so much with Aaron Taylor Johnson.
There's one in every crowd.
I think Bryan Cranston's really good in it. It's all melodrama, but he's good in it. He centers the movie on that. On that entire story. I like
agree. Are you telling me for a second here you actually cared about Elizabeth Olsen and Taylor Johnson?
No, I didn't say that. I said Bryan Cranston. I did not say the two of them. Because once after the half hour mark, it switches over it to does. The two of them, yeah. And it's not that the human story isn't interesting anymore. But that first half hour I liked.
Me and Elias each gave a 2.5 Jaws. Matt's between 3, 3.5. Mark, round up Godzilla.
3.
Wow.
I'm on the fence about it, but I'm over the fence in terms of positive. I mean,
well, we can all agree this. It is a big action movie, and our top five this week is our favorite Tom Cruise scenes. And he has a lot of action movies, but he has a lot of dramas. He's funny in some films. Going over this, and I actually pulled out a bunch of DVDs the last couple of days. I watched some Tom Cruise scenes, and I think I've commented on here. He's actually an American treasure, Tom Cruise.
Jesus Christ.
I'm not even kidding you. You watch this guy, and I'm like, God, I love a good Tom Cruise film. And I'm actually getting excited after watching some of these for Edge of Tomorrow.
Matt, you know, I'm excited for Edge of Tomorrow, too. It's Warhammer the movie, so.
You're getting a start at this week, Matt. What's your number five favorite Tom Cruise scene?
My number five favorite Tom Cruise scene is the return of the vampire Lestat when he's playing the piano, and then he goes after Kirsten Dunst's character, in Interview with the Vampire, the Anne Rice novel. Do you know which scene I'm talking about?
I do. Not on my list, but I love that film.
When Lestat finally, no pun intended, bares his fangs and he shows how truly evil he is. He's going to ruin Louis's world, kill the, you know, pretty much his woman at this point. It was a very great scene where everything falls apart for the vampires.
Not on your list.
Not
either.
My list. No.
All right.
He's so sinister in that scene.
Yeah, I don't remember much about Interview with a Vampire. I watched it a couple years ago again, but it's not one that kind of sticks in my head.
I really like it.
Mark, we throw it over to you. What do you got sitting at number five?
I feel like before I do it, there was one movie I wanted to say. I wanted to put in the list at some point. I actually rewatched it again this week. It might be in some of your lists. I don't know yet. But I wish I could have picked a single scene from Born on the 4th of July because that's his best performance. There's nothing in there that I could just say, yeah, that's the scene that defines that film and that performance. The entire thing is just the progression of that character. So I just kind of want to throw that out there as a runner-up.
So what you're saying is this is your Born on the 4th of July honorary list.
Yeah, the entire, every scene that he's in. It's his best performance. Nice. Number five on my list is, here's another one I couldn't pick, but Les Grossman. His scenes as Les Grossman in Tropic Thunder. I didn't know Tom Cruise could be that funny, but he is just hilarious in that film, and I was not anticipating it. I had no idea he was in it when I first saw it. And actually, I take that back. I had heard he was in it. When he shows up, even knowing that he was in it, I had no clue that was him for the first maybe like 30 seconds. It wasn't until the voice and I realized who it is, because he's got this bald cap on and he's got the huge horn rim glasses and he's wearing a fat suit that's not just a fat suit, but his fingers are fat too.
His arms are fat.
Everything about him is fat and just disgusting, and it's so hilarious every time he shows up. That first part, especially where he has the grip punch the guy in the face, the director in the face, just like, you punch that guy.
And who can forget that dance at the end?
The dance
at
the end is great too. I mean, yeah, that's what I'm saying. There, and when he's trying to negotiate with the people who captured his cast, another great scene. That character is great. I figure he's not in it enough to be able to count that as one scene.
Nice. We go from a silly comedy here in Tropic Thunder to, I think, probably his most emotional scene acting wise. for my number five. It took place in the 1999 film directed by Paul Thomas Anderson, Magnolia, I'm speaking of. Cruz plays Frank T.J. Mackey, who is a motivational speaker for men, and he's got this whole great, you know, respect the cock speech on. But that is not the scene I am speaking of. I am going for near the end of the film when he goes to his dying father, finally goes there, and Philip Seymour Hoffman is at-home nurse taking care of his dad, and he goes to see his dad, and finally he has all this such hatred towards him and is saying all these mean things, but at the same time, it's your dad, and you got that emotional attachment, you know, to your parents, and obviously this film deals a lot with regret and you know, bad relationships, broken relationships between parents and their kids, and that moment at the end when he's alongside his bed and he finally breaks down into tears, maybe one of Tom Cruise's best moments acting wise.
Definitely, that's a fantastic scene, and one of the things that's really spectacular about that scene is that Jason Robards plays the father, and he was dying of cancer when he was filming it, and he knew it. That performance, when you watch it with that context, is also great. It's a fantastic film. Paul Thomas Anderson, the way that is cast, that he cast that film, is just that probably is my favorite film of Paul Thomas Anderson's. Magnolia.
Really?
Yeah, it's tough. It's not easy to categorize in any respect, and that ending just throws you for a loop.
It does.
I mean, Tom Cruise in that, that's one of his best performances.
It is. I mean, the whole thing, like I say, the beginning, his performance and how confident he is talking to the guys in the room is awesome.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then this whole breakdown at the end is great. And then, you know, 3 seconds later, you got Raining Frogs. I mean, what can be better than
exactly.
Raining Frogs?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, we can't spoil that now. It's been out for like 15 years.
It's an old movie. It's a great one, though, Jawheads.
Oh, man, 15 years old.
If you have
old?
Not seen it, whew, Magnolia. We're into our fours. Matt, what do you got sitting there?
Now we go to action. This is later in his career, after maybe some of us thought he was washed up, but he came back with a vengeance in Ghost Protocol, Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol. The scene in particular that I'm talking about is, of course, when he's climbing the building. I think it's called the Burj in Dubai.
Right.
Which Tom Cruise actually performed this stunt on his own. It was not a stunt double. Of course, he was wearing a harness, which we'll forgive. I mean, if you look at this building, it's like one of the tallest buildings in the world.
It is the tallest
is
building
it the
in the
tallest?
World.
Okay. So, I mean, come on. Let's give the guy a harness. But still, he did that on his own. I would not have the balls. I don't even want to step out into that little glass thing at the Sears Tower.
No. I'm terrified of heights. Seeing that on the IMAX, that was enough for me. That scene.
I get vertigo watching the scene.
I agree. And it was a reminder, too. As great as these special effects we're seeing, especially in these superhero films, nothing replaces good old action scene like that, where it's the actual actor outside of an actual building. It's real, and it's scary as hell. I'm not great with heights, and I love that scene because I was sitting in my seat grabbing the armrests.
Yeah, it's thrilling, right? Mm-hmm. Such a great, fun scene, and I got to give Tom Cruise credit for doing his own stunt there.
Yeah, awesome pick. That honorable mention for me. Wonderful. Mark,
honorable mention.
Oh,
wow, okay.
I also want to say, to your point, Mark, about the 4th of July, Born on the 4th of July, I would pick, like, for an entire movie, Days of Thunder. That would be
well played. Well played.
There we go.
Mark, what do you got sitting at four?
At number four, I have Old Time Rock and Roll from Risky Business. It's actually the only one on my list that I'm looking at now that's kind of older and more iconic. But that's the one that I'm going to pick for his iconic moment from the 80s, because that sums it up. I mean, that's when you're young and you're stupid and you have all the freedom in the world, at least what you think is freedom in the world. That's what you do. You just take off your clothes and dance around in your underwear to some, you know, song that no one probably thought you were listening to. Your parents are gone, you have freedom, and you're going to enjoy the hell out of it. And that's what that film is. And then, of course, learning the truth about it. But that moment just kind of sums up, for me, at least what adolescence is about, where you think you have the freedom, you really don't. But you're going to enjoy it while you can.
And talk about an iconic scene.
I mean,
that's one of the greats in movie history.
Yeah, I mean, this, like, when you think about movies in general, this scene pops into your head.
Yeah.
It's a famous, famous scene.
I mean, just his intro into the room as he slides into the room is perfect.
Yeah, yeah, just that one moment.
Awesome. Nice pick, Mark. At number four, I go with a film. There was a lot of people in their underwear and nudity in this particular scene.
Days of Thunder.
I also came out in 1999. I'm speaking of the great Stanley Kubrick's Eyes Wide Shut. And the scene I am talking about is the orgy scene, which, obviously when it first came out here in the U.S., they had to put in some sort of blockers around, and they had people standing in front of a lot of the pumping action. Yeah,
but is that really good because of Tom Cruise, or is it just because it's an orgy?
Well, here's what I'll tell you. Let me get to the end, okay, and this is why it works as a Tom Cruise scene. I mean, it's already fantastic that he goes to this, and there's this orgy scene going, but it's the mystery of what's going on and the idea that he's not supposed to be there. And when you, the awesome score going on during this scene, it's just that single key piano. God. Ding, ding. And you're so worried about it, but I think it works because it's Tom Cruise. You hate to see your big star that you know so well be uncomfortable. And when he gets called out in that room and they tell him to take off the mask, horror films, I don't care what you got, can throw at me. I was so scared for Tom Cruise. I was like, oh my God. I was so nervous. I remember almost like sweating in the movie theater, like, what do you do at that point? Do you just try to take off and run? Because he's obviously not supposed to be at this party.
That's an understatement. He's definitely not supposed to be there. I watched it again on Blu-ray maybe a couple years ago. Just I had gotten the Blu-ray and I wanted to watch it again. I hadn't seen it in a while. And yeah, I watched it at night and I had headphones on watching it. And when they got to that scene and that piano started playing, seriously, every 30 seconds I was looking around the room trying to, like, are there people here? That scene is scary as hell.
I agree.
And there's nothing going on except people, you know, having all kinds of sex in various positions, which you get to see in the Blu-ray version. It was ridiculous. I have no idea why you put computer-generated people blocking all that stuff. When you watch it, it's like, it's really not that big of a deal. It's just posing and gyrating, and that's it. But yeah, that scene's great. And
yeah.
Matt, I would agree with you. I think that's more of a technical thing than Tom Cruise. But I forgot about the unmasking, and that is a lot going on with Tom Cruise. Because don't forget, he's also in a mask that entire time. You can't see it.
Right. And like
but
I
you
say,
get that fear.
If it was a lesser-known actor, you might not have that fear. I think there's something about the connection we have with a star sometimes, like a Tom Cruise, being uncomfortable in a scene that way, that works on a little bit higher level than a lesser actor. So that was my number four, Eyes Wide Shut orgy scene. Matt, we're into our threes.
Which is fun to say.
It is fun to say. This is one that you admitted to me before we started recording. You had trouble picking a scene from, but I think, or it might have been you, Mark. The escalator scene from Rain Man, where they're coming down from their hotel room in Vegas and they're wearing the matching suits. It's just a brief moment in the film, but it's such a memorable, iconic scene, and maybe it has nothing to do with acting skill. It's just Dustin Hoffman and Tom Cruise riding an escalator together.
Yeah, congratulations to the cinematographer, whoever it was on there. What a great shot that is. It's so memorable.
Very memorable. It's one of those indelible, just like the Risky Business where he slides in his underwear. The two of them coming down that escalator is just part of cinema in my mind. So I love that scene.
Nice pick. I'm glad Rain Man got a mention.
Yeah, it's a really good film.
It is.
Yeah.
We are into our threes, Mark.
Number three, hold off on that ding for a second. I gotta explain this one. So I had to pick Minority Report, because that's one of my favorite Spielberg movies, one of my favorite Tom Cruise movies.
No arguments here.
I love that movie. I wanted to pick the orchestrating the murder crime scene at the beginning.
Yeah.
I really wanted to. One of those things where it's more of a technical thing. But it is fantastic watching Tom Cruise do that, because he does it just like a master conductor, and you see everything. And to be able to do that without really any clue of what this is going to look like and what the picture is going to be, I thought about doing that. Instead, I'd pick the Paris scenes. I'm cheating so much on this list. I picked the Paris scenes from Minority Report. One is the scene where he Mirandizes the guy that he thinks killed his son. And the second one is where he hears the story of what his son's life would have been like if he had lived.
From the precog.
Yes. Played by Samantha Morton.
Right. That was an honorable mention of mine. I love that particular scene where she's talking about his son. He's 15 years old. He's running track.
Yeah.
And Tom Cruise. Ah.
Yeah. But that's the payoff to the scene prior, where he has a chance to kill the man that he wholeheartedly believes killed his son. And instead, he takes this long beat and he just starts reading the Miranda rights to this guy while he's breaking down, crying, trying to keep it together. And that scene, I was watching it and I'm like, yeah, this guy is a movie star, but damn if he can't act the hell out of something like that, as simple as reading the Miranda rights. And then, yeah, the follow-up to that is the story where he's listening to the precog tell that what his son's life would have been like. And he's silent in that, but all of that pain is coming back to him. He's a fantastic actor when he really puts it to it. And so I think that that's a great representation of how he can be both a movie star and a really, really fantastic actor in terms of emotional moments and everything else.
Yeah, I agree with you wholeheartedly. I think Tom Cruise is a fantastic actor. He's taken the wrong roles lately, and his personal life, his personal escapades, unfortunately, have somewhat cast a shadow on his career. Yeah. It's a shame because
it a shame. But what are you going to do?
I love the pick, though.
And yeah, that's a great pick.
I think I know what movie I'm watching after we get done with Jaws.
I haven't seen it.
Yeah,
man, it's been too long.
It's been sitting on my shelf, and I've seen it many a times, but now you got me thinking about how great Minority Report is.
Actually,
I love it.
You got to lend it to me.
Yeah. At number three, I have probably his maybe his most iconic role, and so you guys may have a particular scene from this movie as well. This one came out in 1996, directed by Cameron Crowe. I'm speaking of a scene from Jerry Maguire. But it probably is not the most famous scene that you guys would think, nor the ending scene where you know, he has his big speech to Sourpuss. That is not it either. For me, the scene that I just absolutely love is the scene in the bathroom with Cuba Gooding Jr. He starts off the scene saying, and he's quite funny also, Tom Cruise. He really can be. Mm-hmm. He says to him, "Do you want this jacket? Because I don't need it. Because I am cloaked in failure." And then he goes on to the speech saying, "Help me, help you." And the whole time, the scene is shot from above Cuba Gooding Jr.'s waist. And then at the end, the reveal as the camera pulls away, and he's been standing in front of Tom Cruise the whole time, just butt naked. It's hysterical. And I just love his whole character. At that point, he's almost like a mad scientist, like Richard Dreyfuss in What About Bob? Because he's lost all his clients. He needs Cuba Gooding Jr., and what a performance. There's multiple scenes in Jerry Maguire you can talk about. For my money, though, I love that one. Help me help you.
Well done.
Yeah. That's my number three. We're into our twos, Matt.
All right, at number two, you want to hear my pick, Rye?
I do.
You want the truth?
I think I can handle it.
You can't handle the truth!
He just said he could. What was that?
Actually, the line is, "I think I deserve it." You know, and it's probably, this is why it's my number two, because it's probably really more of a Jack Nicholson scene.
Correct, yeah.
But Tom Cruise acts right back at Jack in that scene. I mean, you really can't have it without the two of them acting at each other or with each other. You know, it's such a powerful moment in a great movie, one of my all-time favorites. And again, it's one of those pillars of modern cinema where you can look to it and say that's a moment in movies that springs to mind when you just think of movies in general. So
yeah, I also had it on my list. It was my number two as well. I commented here in my notes that what it is, like you said, it's Jack's scene, no doubt, but you need that confident, cocky kid in Tom Cruise to somehow get it out of him. At one point, he's finally got to like approach Jack and he's got to get to the point where Jack wants to just tell him, "Yes, I ordered the code red." And Cruise played it perfectly, especially when he gets nuts and he starts yelling right back at him, "You ordered the code red." Oh, I love
it. We always pay attention to the reaction of an actor versus the prompting of the actor, but you need that prompt, and that's what Tom Cruise is for, that is to actually get him to react to that outburst.
Right.
So without that, you know, that scene doesn't exist.
Yeah, and even right before he gets to the big reveal there, I even like when he says to Jack, he says, "You know, you told him, you said that you gave an order that he is not to be touched, and your orders are never broken. You know, then why the two orders? You know, why get him off the base?" And Jack is finally flustered for the first time, and he's like, we'll get back to that. And it's like all of a sudden he's got that upper hand, that little snark of Tom Cruise.
You see the chink in his armor. Yeah,
it's awesome.
Yeah, very, very great scene.
Great scene. Mark, what do you got at two?
Number two, I'm going back to Matt's number four or five. I forgot which one. Climbing the Burj Khalifa in Dubai in Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol. And I'm kind of using this just as kind of a standby for pretty much all the crazy shit that Tom Cruise does even now that you would not expect him to do, any actor to do, let alone, you know, him. I mean, a major movie star. I'm wondering what the insurance policy on that film was to have to, you know, yeah, we're going to have the world's most recognizable movie star out in the tallest skyscraper in the world, just kind of hanging out and, you know, climbing around and swinging back and forth. And when you watch the footage of him actually shooting that, it's insane. I, you know, as like I said, you know, watching on the IMAX was frightening enough, but when I actually saw like YouTube clip of him filming it, like, bah. But there's also, you know, in Mission Impossible 2, when he's hanging off the cliff, there's the dangling from the ceiling in the first Mission Impossible. There's just so many crazy things that he does.
Yeah. When he comes down on that harness in the first Mission Impossible, that's become like a trope that they keep replaying in spy movies.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Beyond a doubt. I'm surprised that really we don't have many like physical comic actors that much anymore. You know, back in the day, you had Buster Keaton risking life and limb to do just make people laugh. Tom Cruise is basically the modern day Buster Keaton. He will do anything just to get a rise out of an audience.
You heard it here first. Yes. Tom Cruise is a modern day Buster Keaton.
He really is. He just does whatever he thinks is necessary to get people to enjoy it.
At number two, I also had the courtroom scene with Jack and Tom. Really quick honorable mention, the Collateral nightclub scene in which Tom Cruise goes in with Jamie Foxx, and Tom Cruise is a badass throughout this movie. He's got the gray hair, Vincent, and he goes into the club, and a shootout goes crazy. And at one point, Tom Cruise like spins around like he's laying on the floor, and he turns around and is just firing his gun. And he gets up, and he just walks right out of the club as confident as all hell, just a total badass. I'll substitute that one in there as well because I love Collateral. That would be my number two scene. Matt, we're into our ones. These are our big boys. Your favorite Tom Cruise scene, Matt?
You know, I was going to pick Jerry Maguire, and it's really a toss-up between Show Me the Money or the scene Who's Coming With Me? You know, this fish. But since we already talked Jerry Maguire, I'm gonna sub one into the last moment, and I have to pick a scene which we have not mentioned. You Lost That Love and Feeling from Top Gun.
Well played, Matthew.
Again, it's a freaking iconic scene from movies. It's not the best movie. It doesn't have to be. It's dumb 80s action at its best. Really, is there a better dumb 80s action movie? I don't think so. Not for my money. Top Gun is the best one. And this is the best scene from the best dumb 80s action movie.
Well done. Well done. Mark, what do you got sitting at number one?
At number one, I have not your scene from Magnolia, but the other one you talked about, his motivational speech. As Frank T.J. Mackey just gyrating and saying horrible things about women. And just, you're sitting there watching this and you cannot help but be like, you know, maybe he kind of does have a little bit of a point. And that's how, it's horrible, but you're sitting there like, well, you know, maybe. But he is such a fantastic presence beyond being an actor. He's a presence and you buy into all of it. No matter what he's saying, no matter what he's doing, you will buy into it. And he can play an asshole really well. He does it in this. He does it in War of the Worlds.
Right.
Where he plays, you know, basically a deadbeat father, but you end up caring about him. You end up caring about him in Magnolia, too. The fact that he can pull that off just by the mere fact of his presence in a movie. That's a movie star. We don't have that many anymore. He's one of them. He's one of the bona fides.
I agree. And there's a third scene in Magnolia of Tom Cruise's that we haven't mentioned. More or less tail ends after the one motivational speech where he's being interviewed by the female interviewer.
Yeah.
And he's so sort of caught off guard by a couple of things, you know, questions that she asks. What a movie.
Yeah.
I'm gonna follow that one up after I watch Minority Report.
Yeah, I got to rewatch it.
It'll be a long night. That's like 5.5
yeah,
hours.
For my number one, if the Jawheads have been paying attention throughout the years, I've talked about this movie many a times. I think it's so underrated. I think it's a minor masterpiece, Mark.
Okay.
Hold on to your socks. I'm speaking of the 2001 Cameron Crowe film, Vanilla Sky.
The only reason I didn't pick it is because I knew it would be on your list.
And I rewatched it again last night, and I've probably seen this ending of this movie maybe more than I've seen almost any movie of all time ending, because I just love to put it on, especially after a few cocktails, giving too much of myself away here. But the rooftop scene, from the point when he's asking for technical support and things are going bad with the lucid dream, and he finally gets to the tech, and they start going up to the elevator, and they start to explain to him pretty point and dry what exactly took place. I don't know why this was so confusing to audiences when it first came out. If you've seen it twice or three times, they explain everything right to you, you know?
Yeah, but you have to wonder, like, how much of this he's imagining and how much of it is real.
Yeah.
So if you take it at face value, yeah, they explain
it
to you.
And again, this is why it's my favorite Tom Cruise scene in a nutshell, is the idea that you needed to have a actor who you believe is this rich, empowered, young guy that has the world by the balls, and Tom Cruise does. So you full on believe it, and you feel so bad when they look back. I love it. He says it in on the rooftop scene at one point. I should have never gotten the car, you know, with Cameron Diaz, because obviously, you know, she drives off the road. His face is deformed. He can't live with himself anymore. Eventually, he commits suicide. Goes into this lucid dream, and all this is this wonderful moment where he's opposite Penelope Cruz, and he's like, "Look at me. I'm frozen and you're dead, and there's nothing we can do about it, but I love you." And we've been watching this whole love story, and this guy's frozen somewhere, and she's dead. They're way in the future, and then they ask, do you want to live a real life or you know, stay frozen and keep dreaming? And he chooses to live a real life, and of course he has to jump off the building. The song that's playing is beautiful. They use real photos of Tom Cruise growing up.
It's Radiohead, isn't
it? No, it's not.
No, that's the opening. Is it Good Vibrations?
It's not. It's not.
No Good Vibrations.
That's also
in
there. We'll throw it in the jawbox. Song that plays at the end of Vanilla Sky on the rooftop. And on his way down, there's the real images of Tom Cruise growing up. Oh, God. Just tears me apart, man. I love that. I just love that movie.
I do too, man. It's actually one of my, not just Tom Cruise movies, but one of my favorite movies.
Yeah. Wow. I'm going to have to revisit it. I haven't seen it since it first came out, and it didn't make that huge of an impression on me. So I'll have to look for it again.
And here's the great thing about $5 movies at Walmart back in the day. I only bought this movie. I saw it and was unimpressed with it also, Mark. I didn't love it in the theater. I thought, well, whatever. Then I saw it. It was $5 at Walmart. So I'll just buy it and watch it again. I saw it a second time. I'm like, whoa, I missed something here. This is great. I've probably seen it about 4 or 5 times. It's probably my favorite Tom Cruise movie, and it would rank in probably my top 25, 30 movies of all time. Okay. I love it. Wow, we went through a whole list of Tom Cruise movies. We're running long, as always, lately.
I have to say that I was actually impressed with how much I actually do like Tom Cruise.
I agree. Mm-hmm. What we're going to do is we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we have trivia, X-movie trivia, in honor of X-Men, Days of Future Past. Plus, me and Matt looking at the fact, should Seth MacFarlane be in front of the camera as well as behind it? Whew, a lot to go.
Yep.
We'll be right back on Cinema Jaw.
Today's episode of Cinema Jaw is brought to you in part by the music of Sorrentos. In 2014, Sorrentos will be releasing Not Where I Want to Be, his eagerly awaited first album as a solo music artist. The first song is released worldwide January 2nd, 2014. Sorrentos' music has already received rave reviews, and he relishes this opportunity to pursue a lifelong dream. Check out more about Sorrentos at www.melogia.com. That's MELOGIA.com. And we thank him for his support.
Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby to get ourselves a treat.
Hi, I'm Matt Kay with a Cinema Jaw movie fact. In the movie The Firm, Holly Hunter is on screen for a total of 5 minutes and 59 seconds, one of the shortest performances ever nominated for an Oscar. She's in 20 scenes for an average of only 18 seconds per scene, and that is your Cinema Jaw movie fact.
To get ourselves a treat.
And we are back on Cinema Jaw, hanging out with Mark Dusick from Mark Reviews Movies. One more time, Mark, for the Jawheads listening to this at home that want to catch your reviews, the best place to do so online?
www.markreviewsmovies.com. You can actually like my Facebook page, too. I created a Facebook page for it. Just search for Mark Reviews Movies, and I'm on Twitter, @MarkReviews.
Thanks again, Mark. And, before we get to trivia, before we get to Cinemore, we did throw some items into the Jawbox.
Oh, yes, we did.
And lately, we've been letting this guy out a little early to talk about movies.
I think his head's getting too big.
I agree. And that's a bad thing because the Jawbox is so small that a big head just won't fit in there, Matt.
I know. Let's deflate him.
Oh, poor guy. Let's open up that Jawbox.
What's your pleasure, Mr. Cotton?
The box.
We got a box!
Oh, what's in the box?
What's going on, guys? Thank you for giving me all this extra breathing room lately. I really appreciate it.
You built an addition onto the Jawbox.
Yeah, so that it could puddle my tears together. All right, let's see. So how many reviews does Mark have on Rotten Tomatoes?
Oh, let's all take a guess. Let's take a stab. Yes, Mark, you start.
I guessed over 1,000, and I would have bet about 1,200.
Matt, you got a guess?
I'm probably over.
Okay, then I'll go under. I'll say 1,150.
Yeah, and these guys are probably way off. I'll say 830.
I was thinking around 830 as well. It is 1,306.
What the hell?
Wow. Well done, Mark.
Yeah.
Wow.
Mark,
like, he did so many that his avatar on here is a picture of him with hair.
Yeah, I know. I had curly hair at one point. I had hair at one point. It was nice.
And your first review was Slow Burn. And
yeah, see, I don't think that's accurate because really? That movie didn't come out in 2000.
Okay, well, it's weird. Well, then maybe it's
weird. There's another movie probably called Slow Burn that I got attached to.
Oh.
I have no idea.
Yeah, because then your next one was in February 2002, so it was about two years later you reviewed your first one, Freddy Got Fingered.
Yeah, see, what's funny, though, is I wasn't even writing reviews in 2000, so I know that that's not accurate. I didn't start till 2001.
Okay.
So all there, right. That's how that happened.
All right.
What else we got in the Jawbox?
That song is called The Nothing Song, and it's by Sigur Rós.
Ah, The Nothing Song. Now I'm going to have to play it.
Yeah, because I can't imagine it.
It's a beautiful song. Beautiful, beautiful.
I'm just going to rewatch that scene.
Yeah.
Yeah, all the other songs are getting all the credit. You know, you guys were thinking it was the ones with the big names, but it was
a
lesser artist.
Yeah, yeah, smaller band.
Lesser known.
Awesome. Was that all we threw in there?
That was.
All right. Get back in that Jawbox.
Thank you.
Matt, it brings us to a segment called
Cinema War.
And Cinema War works like this, Jawheads. This is where me and Matt battle on a topic each week. And our guest this week, Mark Dusick, gets to play judge, jury, and executioner and tell the Jawheads at home who he thinks won this Cinema War. And it's very important because me and Matt are battling for 20 seconds of precious, precious Jaw time to rant and rave on whatever we want. Now, as we saw, Seth MacFarlane is in A Million Ways to Die in the West. He didn't just write it. He didn't just direct it. He's starring in it. I don't think that's such a good idea. Heck, Elias, tell the Jawheads at home what today's Cinema War topic is.
Today's Cinema War topic, should Seth MacFarlane stay behind the camera, writing, directing, and voiceover, or should he pursue a big screen acting career? Matt, you'll be fighting Let's See Him Act. Rye, you'll be fighting for Stay Behind the Camera. Let the Cinema War begin.
First of all, I consider voiceover in front of the camera, not behind. Seth MacFarlane is a multi-talented polymath. He does the voiceover, writing, acting, comedy. This guy can do it all. Of course we want to see him in front of the camera.
Matt, Seth MacFarlane has a good thing going right now. He made the jump from animated TV show to the big screen with the hilarious Ted. There's no doubt he can write some funny material and voice foul-mouthed teddy bears. However, he can't act. Stay behind the camera, buddy.
You know what, Rye? It's easy and safe to want the man who gave us the infamous hooker turd joke to stick to writing. But as we learned from the same film, his delivery of comedy is so amazing. Who better to act out his writing than himself?
Matt, when MacFarlane hosted the Oscars, many people did not know what he looked like. And after that sad performance, many people are trying to forget what he looked like. A Hollywood career can crumble when you step outside your kill zone.
Did Seth really bomb at the Oscars? Did he really? Or is the Oscar crowd just a little too anal retentive and stuck up to accept truly edgy humor? I thought he was hilarious. The guy is a comedic genius.
He bombed. Matt, A Million Ways to Die in the West looks funny, I have to say. But I am already wondering how much better it could have been with a more accomplished funny man actor in the lead. Just because you can write does not mean you can act.
All right, Rye, you just need to cop to the fact that Seth MacFarlane is the funniest thing going in Hollywood today. Perhaps you'd prefer more Sandler Barrymore movies or another Anchorman sequel. MacFarlane is fresh, and I, for one, cannot wait to see what he does next.
All right, Matt, you can actually sense the public turning on Seth MacFarlane. We heard it in the Jawheads tweets. People are becoming sick of him. The last thing he needs to do right now is stick his stupid-looking grin into the spotlight. If people's MacFarlane patience is already wearing thin, wait till they see his wooden acting. Buttonheads here, buttonheads on Cinema War. As always, we throw it to our guest, our jury. Mark, what did you think of this Cinema War?
Intense.
This is a tough one.
It's kind of tough, but I mean, what if I haven't seen him act in as a human being. I've heard him do voices, obviously, and yeah, I thought it was really funny in Ted doing that voice of Peter Griffin again. But I haven't seen him. I haven't even seen a trailer for Million Ways to Die in the West yet, so I don't even know what kind of performance he might give. So I'm kind of siding with Matt just for the fact that I haven't seen him act yet, and I don't know what that will look like. Maybe after I see that, maybe it's time to say, hey, Rye was right. But I don't right now, this is where I'm at.
Wow.
All right.
Matt, I don't know how, but you keep winning these damn things.
I'm just better than you.
Yeah, I tell you.
Clearly. What is that, like 3 or 4 in a row?
At least. Boy, oh boy.
Maybe I'll get my 10 in a row again.
Here we go. Here we go again. That earns you 20 seconds of precious jaw time to rant and rave on whatever you want. Hit it away, big boy.
All right. You know what? I think that Ryan and Elias's understanding of monster movies is sadly reprehensible. We need to get these guys up to snuff. So I propose in the very near future, we do monster movies as a topic, which is a topic I don't think we've ever touched.
We've touched.
We've done monster movies?
We have.
Come on.
Yeah. With Monster Haiku.
That's right. Okay. I take it back. You Elias, you need to watch more monster movies. There's my 20 seconds.
All right.
If I could throw out an idea, the Cinema Jaw Monster Movie Film Festival.
Oh, God. That would be hilarious.
That would be awesome.
Yeah.
I'd be there.
I like the way Mark thinks.
I love those. I used to watch them as a kid all the time.
Hey,
I'd love to revisit them.
Let's start talking to the new 400.
Yeah. Thank you, Mark, for taking
no problem.
A bad idea, making it good.
I will be there for it.
All right, so X-Men Days of Future Past is in theaters. We are playing X movie trivia. X marks the spot here, Matt.
Turning off my phone.
Nice. Mark, you're our guest. You get to choose if you want to go first or let Matt go first. There are steals, and if you don't know a particular answer, you get one trip to the ER. Elias Rodriguez will help you out with a clue.
Okay. I will defer to the host.
Wow. Question number one in X movie trivia. Matt, Vin Diesel starred in this 2002 movie as an extreme sports athlete recruited by the government on a special mission.
Triple X.
We also would have accepted XXX, just so you know.
But not three X's. That would not have been accepted.
No, that would have got a buzzer. Question number two, over to you, Mark.
All right.
What was the full title of the second X-Files movie that came out in 2008?
The X-Files, I Want to Believe.
Yes.
I want to believe that movie never happened.
Yeah.
That's such a shame, too, because I really wanted to see it turned into a sort of like a series of like a James Bond and the X-Files lives on.
That would have been nice. The first movie got me to watch the X-Files for a little bit.
Mm.
I had no idea what
it
was.
I like the first one.
Yeah, first one's good.
All right, question number three. It is tied up 1-1. Question number three over to you, Matt. Edward Norton starred in American History X. What actor played his little brother in the film?
Edward Furlong.
Ooh. 2-1, Matt K. We got a ball game here, Mark.
You know what I was waiting on was Edward Norton started this movie, American History Blank. That would have been great.
Question number four over to you, Mark.
All right, here we
Denzel
go.
Was robbed of an Oscar for his acting in 1992's Malcolm X. Who directed the film?
Spike Lee.
Spike Lee joint.
There we go. Yeah. It is 2-2. Whew. You can cut the tension with a knife. Question number five over to Matt. Which actress played Storm in the first X-Men movie that came out in the year 2000?
That would be Halle Berry.
Boy, I love when everybody's perfect.
Woo.
Question number six. Don't drop the ball here, Mark.
Okay.
We know Matthew Broderick starred in the 1987 classic chimpanzee movie Project X, but what actress played Terry, the graduate student who trains the chimp and joins Broderick on the mission to rescue him? You do have a lifeline if you need it.
And what else can I do? Is that my only option?
That's
lifeline?
It. You got a lifeline, or you want to go to the ER.
Or you can take a guess.
What's the difference between lifeline and ER again?
Same thing.
They're the same thing. You take a trip to
the
ER. All
right,
ER,
I'm
going
to go a trip to the ER so we can get the alarm. Whoa! The siren going.
A trip to the ER. Question number six. Elias Rodriguez, what actress was in Project X?
Your clue is she is as good as it gets.
Helen Hunt.
Oy. Wow. Who knew Helen Hunt was in Project X?
Apparently I didn't.
I was really about to guess Ally Sheedy.
Wow.
You know?
Yeah. It is still now 3-3. Can you thank our engineer?
Thank you.
There you go.
You're welcome.
Compliments flying around the room. 3-3. Two questions left. Question number seven over to Matt. What is the name of the 1986 movie in which a movie special effects man is hired to fake a real-life mob killing for a witness protection plan?
I love that movie.
Hint, it starred Brian Dennehy.
I know. I was going to say Brian Dennehy. FX.
Wow. We got to go back to the archive to know the last time Matt went perfect on trivia.
It's been a long time.
4-3, Matt. Over to Mark to keep it perfect. Here you go.
Okay, here we go.
What famous actor, Mark, popped up in the first X-Files movie to play paranoid doctor Alvin Kurtzwell, who explains to Mulder that the bomb was allowed to go off to get rid of four dead bodies that were evidence to some alien virus?
Oh boy, this is not going to turn out well, I can tell you that right now.
Famous actor popped up in the X-Files, played Dr. Alvin Kurtzwell.
Is he famous at the time?
he has won an Oscar. That's all I'll say. So you know it's an accomplished actor.
I'm just going to say Chris Cooper because it seems like something. And here comes the... Yeah.
Wow. Ooh. Wow. Matt, you got a chance for a steal. You've won this one.
I really don't know, so I guess I might as well take a trip to the ER.
Why not? Whoa, a trip to the ER, Elias Rodriguez. What actor popped up in the first X-Files movie?
Your clue is, played Bela Lugosi in Ed Wood.
Oh, that's right.
Who played Bela Lugosi in Ed Wood?
See, this clue would have helped you, Mark.
It was Johnny Depp.
Well, Johnny Depp was Ed Wood.
I know that, but I'm trying to freak you out.
Was it Leslie Nielsen?
That would have been good.
He would have been a good Bela Lugosi.
Of course, we were looking for Martin Landau. Martin Landau.
Oh,
wow,
yes.
Forgot. Wow.
Yeah.
I need to watch that one again,
hey,
apparently.
But technically, because that was a steal, I'm still...
You win. That's it. That's the ball game. Matt, you win this one 4-3. Let's get a handshake.
Good job.
Well done. Well done. There was a jawbreaker, we call it, in case it came down to a tie. We would have threw this question over to Matt, actually, this time. Better Magneto, Ian McKellen or Michael Fassbender?
That's actually a trick question. It's Adam West.
Doesn't matter which we would have answered.
Yeah,
there.
I know. Who was it, though?
The real jawbreaker is this. Dead or alive, Martin Landau. Matt, you got to guess.
Dead.
Alive.
He is alive.
He's got to be in his late 80s, though.
85 years young. 85 for Martin Landau.
That was close.
Still got a beat. Still got a beat. Actually, the real jawbreaker was this. Age of Ian McKellen, closest to.
He's a freaking old dude, too. I mean, what he's...
I should say dead or alive. No, he's alive. Closest to. What do you got, Mitt?
Ian McKellen is 76 years old.
Lock him in at 76. Elias, what do you got, Mark?
78.
We'd give that to Matt, you're on a roll. He is 75.
Oh.
And he is actually 74. He turned 75 May 25th, which is...
Right when this podcast
is coming out.
Yeah.
Yeah,
happy birthday, Ian McKellen.
There you go.
Right.
Yeah.
Wonderful. Wow. Wow. A lot of fun here, Matt.
Yeah, this was an awesome episode.
Yeah.
Oh, before I forget, I want to plug that I was just on Alcohollywood.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah, and the episode should be their most current one. We discussed the film Cloak and Dagger, which was a real treat for me. I got to revisit a childhood favorite of mine. It's with the kid from E.T., Henry Thomas, I believe is his name. Mm-hmm. And there's some other notables in there. Dabney Coleman. Great movie. Had a great time on Alka Hollywood. I highly encourage anybody to check that podcast out. Not just because I was on their most recent episode. It's a good podcast all around.
But did you get as smashed as I did when I was on there, man?
No, but they were so paranoid that I was gonna. They were like, did you eat?
I got a little tipsy on their podcast.
Wow.
Yeah. Hmm. And
yeah, no, saying he got a little tipsy is like saying that that building in Dubai is tall. You know, he was fucking hammered.
Oh, boy. Don't listen to that one, Jawheads.
No, you should. It was the Gravity episode, and it's freaking hilarious.
I love that movie.
Good stuff. Good stuff.
Yeah.
Brings us to the end of a great Jaw. First and foremost, we got to thank our guest, Mark Dusick. Thanks for coming on.
No problem.
We also got to thank our sponsors.
Yeah, thanks to CastN.com. It's CASTN.com. It's a brand new podcast app that bridges the gap between podcasts and social media.
And also, thanks to the new 400 Theaters.
Yeah, it's the best place to catch a movie in Chicago.
It is. Check out what's playing at the new 400 at their website, thenew400.com.
We thank them for their support.
And we have to thank the best engineer in the biz, Elias Rodriguez.
Thanks, guys.
Yay.
Until next week, check us out on Facebook.
Follow us on Twitter.
And keep on jawing about the movies.